Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
Hello and welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bob Ginsberg. I'm here with Tom and Melissa Gould. The gathering is where we gather to talk about questions that you've sent in, or feel free to call us, join in the discussion. Maybe you have a question. The number here is 888-627-6008. And before we get going, I just wanted to mention it's been a tough couple weeks for the foundation. We lost two of our own. Dr. Claude Swanson, who's the former president of Forever Family Foundation, passed to spirit recently. Claude was a brilliant scientist. He did his undergraduate work at MIT, got his PhD from Princeton. He had a stellar career in the private sector as a physicist. And then he started searching for evidence of the things that we talk about, and pretty much left the corporate life to devote the rest of his life to investigating non-physical subjects. So he wrote some tremendous books, and we will miss him terribly. And then, of course, over the past few days, Janet Nohavik, a certified medium of Forever Family Foundation. I think Tom and Melissa will agree that she epitomized mediumship at the highest level. She was trained,
absolutely.
You know, Arthur Finley, and a former Catholic nun, which was really, you know, interesting that she had that, you know, perspective. And she volunteered for many retreats and events that we have done. She used to donate a church to us once a year, and we used to have an event there, and just a wonderful, wonderful person with a tremendous sense of adventure too. I remember she'd come to our conventions and retreats, and I'd be looking for her, and she winds up getting up like at 6 a.m. to walk on the beach or explore some cave, or, you know, she was just always out and about. So our condolences to the family of both the Swansons and the family of Janet Nohavik. We will miss them terribly. And now I guess we will get to some questions that you have written in. If you didn't get a chance, call us, 888-627-6008. Let's see. So we have a question here. Do spirits go in and out of our lives? And he writes, probably varies with each spirit, I suppose. Or are they with us as in around our physical space constantly? After all, we are in the same space, just in a different dimension or vibrational plane. I get the sense that they are with us constantly, and we communicate with them telepathically, and they hear us, and they may respond, as in my case. There's a question. It's put a little bit differently, but it's a question we get a lot. I mean, are they always involved with our life? Are they with us, you know, constantly? My personal opinion is that they're not with us constantly, because there's really no need for that. I've thought about this, you know, in quantum physics, you know, they talk about collapse of a wave function when something is observed. It doesn't exist until it's, you know, an conscious observation brings it, collapses the wave. It's not the same thing, but I think of it like, somehow, if we reach out to our loved ones in spirit, whether that be a verbal communication or a strong thought intention, somehow It's similar. It collapses that wave of communication. It draws their attention to us, and that's how they know when we really need to talk to them. So my answer to that would be that they are always remain a part of our lives, but they're not always with us at every moment. What do you guys think?
Well, I would agree with what you said, Bob. That's how I feel, that they could, as we say at the end of our program, they're only a heartbeat away. They're right there if we, I hate to say, summon them, need them. But I believe that, and I don't think they're just like with us like our shadow at every move. I don't see any point in that. We're living our lives freely, so.
Yeah, there's actually two answers to that. One is yes and one is no. and both could be right in certain senses. I know there was a reading that Melissa got that my father was there, and he mentioned, well, after this reading, I'm going out there and I'm going to ride on the back of this jet ski all day long and he'll never even know I'm there. Suggests that, yeah, they go different places. But then there's another instance where if you read the Seth series of books, Seth Speaks, he talks about your soul having kind of like tentacles, and that at the end of each tentacle, you're living in existence. So you can be, your spirit can be in more places than one simultaneously. So there's an old expression that if you keep them in your heart, they live in your heart. So as long as you have love for the person, they will be always there. But consciousness, and we're all talking about survival of consciousness, the conscious soul can go where it wants to go, like my father riding on a jet ski. So, and as Melissa say, if you need them and you talk to them and call them by name, I know Melissa had a great example she used to say about if you're at a party and somebody mentions your name across the room, not talking to you necessarily, but your name comes up, your ears perk up and you immediately are drawn to that. Well, what are they saying about me? So I think it's the same for the spirit world, that if you are missing your loved ones, which you're doing most of the time anyway, but if you're feeling down and you call out to them or speak to them or tell them how much you love them or miss them, yeah, they will be right there.
Yeah, it's almost as if they can sense, our emotion, or they can, so yeah. Emotion enhances the probability of them contacting us. Here's another one. I lost my son 3 years ago and my husband a year and a half. I've been told by a medium that they can't get through to me because my grief is too intense. What can I do about that? Certainly.
Find another medium.
Mediums have told us that grief can inhibit receiving communication, all sorts of types of communication. On the other hand, a lot of people that go to mediums are in grief and the loved ones still come through. So, I don't want to be cynical, but, if the medium is not making a connection, it's easy for them to say, you're too much in grief, which may or may not be true, but I wouldn't think that it's impossible for you to get a reading despite the heavy grief that you're in.
Did this questioner seem to indicate it's been more than one medium that tells them that?
Well, I've been told by a medium, so it was one medium that said that, yeah.
I know we often at the grief retreats, when we talk about signs, people say, I don't get any signs from my loved one. And it's sometimes because their grief might be so overwhelming to them, they really can't get out of their own heads to open their eyes and hearts to feel and sense them.
Mm.
But they think, I know years ago when Fran and I and a few other of our associates went to medium training with Doreen Malloy, one of our certified mediums. And Doreen guided us to communicate with our loved ones. And we each took turns, and with Doreen guiding us, everyone seemed to be making a connection. I know with my experience, I was expecting some big aha, kind of like, now I've got it. But it wasn't. It was just so subtle. It was just like my own thoughts I was expressing. And yet, you know, when guided by Doreen as to, well, what are you seeing? What are you thinking? I think you experienced the same thing with Angelina Diana when she had a development course.
Yeah.
So I think people often feel like the communication has to be something kind of big and loud and real attention getting. So the medium in this case, you know, might have just been using that kind of as an excuse.
Yeah. Well, you raise a good point in that a lot of people have this misconception about mediumship that it's, you know, it's like bam in your face, you know, it's like, but the information that mediums get sometimes is just as you described. It's very subtle and it's more of a sense of presence, and it's sometimes it's difficult to, you know, for them to communicate specific facts.
Yeah, it's preconceived expectations of what a sign is supposed to be. I know there are mediums who say, well, pick a sign and ask for a sign. So people who hang their hat on that might be disappointed. I think 90% of the signs that people get there are dismissed by coincidence or, that happened, which is why we recommend keeping a journal. If you, you know, again, something as simple as you turn on the radio and your loved one's favorite song is playing. Could be a sign, could be coincidence, but if you just write it down, and were you thinking about what happened right before that? Were you thinking about them? Write that down. Or you see a feather on the ground and go, well, that's interesting, but, you know, it could be a coincidence. But again, were you thinking about your person, and you write that down. And then if you keep a journal, all those little things, the coin here, or the, you know, the feather there, the bird or the butterfly, all the different things that could just coincidentally happen in your life. But if you write them down and then go back 6 months or a year later and read through the journal, you might see a pattern that, oh my goodness, those were signs and that you were getting them.
And how they made you feel.
Like, well, exactly.
Were you thinking about your loved one, or you just turned on the radio, there was the song, it was like, oh my goodness, that song has special meaning for me. Right. And it's how it makes you feel. So bottom line. And also, it's important maybe not to overshare with non-believers, because they'll just cut you right down and make you feel worse sometimes.
Yeah. Here's one. I've done guided visualizations where I have invited my deceased dad to join me, and he usually appears to be in his 30s, 40s, or 50s. Recently, though, he appeared much younger, about the time he would have been a Navy officer in World War II, about 13 years before I was born. It was amazing to see him so young. How is that possible? It makes sense. I look at a picture that somebody takes of me now, and I look at myself and I say, man, like, when did I get old? You know, I mean, I don't particularly enjoy looking, you know, at a picture of myself now. But recently I was looking at was cleaning out my drawer and I saw pictures of me in college and then when I first got married in my very early 20s. And I said, well, you know, I was healthy and thin. I look good. So if I, you know, when I pass over, if I want to come to my loved one in a dream visit, I'm not going to come as old man Bob. I'm going to come as Bob in his 20s, you know, maybe without the long hair and the beard, but so it makes sense, right? I mean, your dad would come to you. Sure. He thought you'd get a kick out of seeing him when he was so young and appreciate that. So, and how is it possible? We no longer have bodies in the other world. You know, we're free from the shackles of the physical body. So we could manifest any body that we want. So it's, you know, whether it's young or old, it's still possible.
I want you to send me those pictures, Bob. I want to see.
Yeah, you'd laugh your ass off, I'll tell you.
No, I want to be able to recognize you when you come to me, if you go first or if I go first.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We have a wall of pictures of you.
I'll send you, you know, of course they were Polaroids back then. So yeah. When I'm getting ready to go, I'll FedEx you some of those photos. So you'll know when I appear that that's me.
I want to recognize you.
They're Polaroids. You mean you weren't dressed?
There are some of those too, but those are what I send you because I will be clothed when I come to visit Melissa. For you, Tom, anything goes, but for, you know, I have to be respectful. You refer to your retreats as grief retreats. Do you mean taking a retreat from your grief? Or a retreat gathering for those in grief. I get what she means. It's, I think it's both, right? I mean, in a sense, we would love it if you can just take a breather, you know, from your grief for a while. In that sense, it is a retreat from your grief, but it's a retreat in the classical sense too, you know, that's interesting. Ever think that our earthly existence is what some religions call hell? All of us here have been sent here because of the hardship or disease or misfortune that can happen, as opposed to other realms where those things don't exist. I remember Fran used to say to me often, when we got on the subject, no, this is hell. You know, I mean, everything else is different from here. So, yeah, I mean, when you think about it, this is the only place that you can suffer, really. You know, I mean, you're not going to suffer where we're going. So in that sense, you know, hell. But of course, people have wonderful lives, you know, here and have a lot of joy as well. But I think the possibility of bad stuff happening, you know, sort of makes it, you know, that hellish type of existence.
Yeah. So.
Well, it does make sense because apparently when you're spirit, you're unencumbered and you fly here, you go there, you transport yourself to another planet or another time, and you ride on somebody's jet ski, you're having fun, and then you come to Earth and it's like you put shackles on. You can't fly anymore, and the older you get, you can barely even walk. And then all the aches and pains and the hardships. And yeah, it's definitely not what I would call heaven. Although, as you say, there are plenty of
good moments,
great moments that feel heavenly. So,
right. There's some questions that came in last week, and I don't think that we got to them. And if we did, you'll have to remind me. There was one. Do you have instant knowledge and memories of all of the lives you've lived once you cross over? Got me. You got, you got me. I don't know. So when mediums communicate with somebody, it's obvious that you in the afterlife realm have your personalities and memories because that's how they're able to bring through. Mediums, if you remembered all of the, had all the memories from all of your past lives, wouldn't you think the mediums would be tremendously confused and start giving you information about your life like 200 years ago or whatever? So now you could also make the argument that, well, maybe that's why some of this stuff doesn't make sense, because that's a memory or a personality from a previous life. So I don't know the answer to that. You guys have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's probably mostly because it's the spirit doing the communication. I mean, everybody thinks, oh, there's a medium. The medium can communicate. And yes, they can. They can understand the communication, but they can't initiate the communication. You can't come in and say, oh, I want to talk to, or like me coming in, I want to talk to John Lennon. Can you call up John Lennon? No, you can't. Only if John Lennon wanted to talk to me would I be talking to John Lennon. So it's the same with your loved ones. And they communicate in ways that you will understand. So clearly you couldn't understand a past life. So they're not even going to bring that stuff up, whether they know about it or not. I'm not sure, but they're certainly not going to bring it up if they're trying to get through to you. They're going to stick with things that you know. I mean, I do know that in some readings, you'll get, I've got your grandmother here who's saying that she's looking after you and the kids and that sort of thing. And the sitter will go, well, I never knew my grandmother. So, you know, it's nice to hear from them. And in the midst of this reading that you will get people that you didn't, certainly that you didn't expect to hear from, but then you will get people that you didn't even know, or a spirit knows that you work in an office with the wife of a spirit, and, oh, you're going to see my wife, you know, tomorrow, tell her this about me. And she never, you know, I just worked with the wife in an office. I never met her husband, and yet here's the husband coming through and talking to me. And again, that's the mediums are just conduits, and they're not a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot of them, but they're not enough to reach everybody, and every spirit that wants to communicate with their living loved ones, they won't be in the vicinity of a medium. So they have to do whatever they can to try to get messages through. And if they see a medium, they'll come to that medium and try to get a message. And sometimes the medium won't know who they're talking about. So.
I lost track of the question.
Yeah, I lost track of the answer.
Well, it's because it's not an easy answer. The fact of the matter is we don't know, but
right.
we can only assume. Does a person's grudge against another die with that person, or does spirit hold on to this energy? Well, we can only go by our experience by observing mediums. I mean, when they're bringing through people in spirit, you don't hear about grudges or anger or resentment. You know, it's mostly, you know, loving and compassionate. So does that mean that all spirits immediately give up, you know, grudges once they get there? You know, perhaps not. You know, perhaps it's a gradual thing. You know, they say that we are over there what we were here, at least initially. So, you know, they have maybe they hold a grudge, but I don't think it lasts for that long. Plus the fact that they have a totally different perspective now that they're in a different realm. And maybe they see things that we weren't able to see, or they weren't able to see when they were in the physical. So the grudge may seem ridiculous, because, you know, to them. So I don't think. Do you think that people hold grudges in the afterlife?
You know, I often talk about, I believe that there is a life review. And I think in that life review, whatever the person may have experienced that would have caused the grudge to begin with is now looked at in a different way.
That's true.
Processed in a different way and you know, worked out and dissolved. And so there would not be any grudge. And it's challenging sometimes when the person who had the grudge or who had maybe done something unkind or downright nasty to a living person and comes back. We've heard this before, that the person getting the reading says, oh, I don't want to hear from him. You know, he was not nice to me. But if you can see the bigger picture and know that they're not that person any longer, or they are, but they've learned, because we hear that personalities stay intact.
Yeah.
But they understand the error of their ways.
Yeah. In the many readings that I've witnessed, I have never had somebody coming through with a grudge. But as Melissa said, there's countless times when somebody comes through to apologize for their misbehaviors. So I would think all is forgiven at that point, and they're hoping that you forgive them here for the nastiness that they portrayed while they were here.
Right. In deaths that are premature, such as an accident or a murder, etc., of someone's that was young, is there a moment of conscious choice to let go versus fight to stay? I don't think it has anything to do with being young or old when the time comes. Everything seems to point that we all have that choice of to let go versus fight. You know, sometimes we're told basically that we have to fight because we're sent back when we want to let go. You know, that's what we read from, you know, the near-death experience reports. So that moment, there is a moment of conscious choice, but I don't know that it has anything to do with, you know, whether it was an accident or whether there was an illness. So
basically when your number's up, your number's up. And we've heard again, countless, accounts, in the near-death experience where people not only were close to death, but they were flatlined. They were clinically dead. And they say that they met a being on the other side who said, oh no, it's not your time. And you go back. So regardless of age, you know, if you die at childbirth or you die when, you know, at very young age, that's what you were here for. For whatever reason, whether it was a lesson for your family or, you know, who knows exactly what the purpose is, but there are people who come to the planet who are only going to be here a short time. And as we just mentioned, if it is your time, you will go. And if it's not, you'll come back. Now, that being said, there are plenty of readings that I've seen where the person who passes, the spirit comes back, and say it was a mother, and the daughter is the sitter who's all frustrated because or feeling guilty because they wanted to be there at the time of the passing, and they get up to go to the bathroom or go to the nurse's station. And when they come back, the person has passed and they feel horrible about it. And then when in the reading, the mother from the other side says, no, I didn't want you there at the time, so I waited until you left and then I passed. So
yeah, well, you're being psychic again, because the next question was, when one transitions alone, do they hear and know you got there too late? Do they still feel your love? So that was the next, very next question, which you're addressing right now.
Yeah.
So of course they still feel your love, you know, and like you were saying, Tom, we see a lot of reports of people that are very, very close to death, and they hang on because they want to see to be with their loved one when they pass. But we see an equal number of reports of people who, for the opposite reason. They don't want their loved one there. You know, they don't want the loved one to have to see them transition. That, you know, so they purposely transition before you actually get there. So it seems to be an even split. I don't know, you know, how that decision is made, but either way, your physical presence of being there, they're still going to feel your love. So I wouldn't worry about that. Let's see. Sometimes I have memories of things that happened when I was very young, but when I try to verify these experiences with family members or friends, they are not aware of what I remember. Is it possible that these are past life memories? Yeah, I think it's possible. You know, why not? I mean, that does happen a lot. It's happened to me. You know, I remember something kind of vividly, and nobody can verify it. And they say, no, I don't remember anything like that. So that's strange. But certainly in my case, I know my memories fade. So that could be a reason too. Or maybe something similar happened and my mind is filling in the details to try to make sense of it. So, But in the first part of it, I think that may be true. I mean, if you believe in past lives, you know, maybe some of these memories carry over. I know that they usually fade by adulthood, but not all, right?
I work with young children, and I remember one of my students, the mom was rather upset that her daughter kept talking about when she lived in the yellow house with her other mommy. And I, of course, being me, was fascinated by this, and I wanted to know more information, but the mom wanted to shut it down. And I was like quite interested, like, tell me more. What else do you remember?
Yeah. A lot of medium questions. I have read that some mediums use cold reading techniques. What does that mean? A fraudulent medium will make assumptions based upon what they see or what the information they've picked up. They'll look at you. They see your approximate age. Maybe you have an accent, you know, your ethnicity. And they'll make, they'll look for slight body movements when they make a statement. And if they see a slight acknowledgement, they'll jump on that. Or if they see, you know, the opposite, you know, they'll move on to something else. So, you know, I think that even evidential mediums subconsciously might be using, you know, such techniques, even though they're not even aware of it. Because I've seen really good mediums that are in the middle of a reading and they'll mention, you know, somebody's, you know, mom, and they'll see the look on the sitter, like, you know, a body movement that would tell them that no, mom is still here, and they'll immediately pivot. I watch those things, you know, so I think it doesn't mean the medium fraudulent. We know that they're really a really good medium, but they're also human, and we pick up on interactions. We're always reading people and observing people, so that seeps in. But the truly fraudulent mediums will base the entire reading on these techniques. So it's something to really look out for. How many times have we heard this? Why can't mediums get first and last names?
Sometimes they get first names. I've seen plenty that they'll just come up with a name. A lot of times they'll just say, well, I got a B name, like a Bob or a Barbara or a Bill, you know.
Right.
And try to narrow it down that way. But
and we don't know how they're getting the information. If they're hearing, or if they're seeing kind of a B, or if they're seeing a book.
Or their brother Bill. Oh, I got, you know, why are they showing me my brother Bill? Well, do we have a Bill here? Or, you know, does Bill mean anything to you? Because, again, the thing to remember, mediums, it's not one size, all mediums are not the same. And I often equate mediumship with playing the violin, because many mediums will say, well, you don't need me, you can do this yourself. Well, yeah. But if I want to hear a great violin piece, I want somebody who is practiced and can really play. And so, yeah, where you have a medium who has a connection, but then you have another medium who's got a really great connection, you're going to get better information. And you know, everybody can play the violin, but most people sound like they're in an elementary school orchestra, and not many sound like they're playing at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, as you mentioned, the mediums get information in different ways. Now, some mediums actually hear, you know, spirit, you know, talking, but many do not. They get information in other ways. And really hard to get an exact first or last name, because if you, it's not like a telephone line where they're saying, my name is Alexander, you know. So they may be getting an image, you know, or even like a photograph pops into the medium's mind, or, you know, some sort of clue that this person in spirit is trying to get through. So it's really, I'm amazed when they do get an exact name. And that's why, or maybe they'll, a lot of them will say that because they really don't know, when they say, well, I have an A name, you know. But sometimes they're really getting the sound. They're picking up on the sound, like an A-L something, but they can't make it out. It's hard, you know, it really is. So, I mean, that's different than a medium in a group setting saying, I have somebody with an A name of 50 people, and, you know, somebody's going to, you know, we're not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, the difficulties of translating the information from spirit into language. It's not easy. I use the example, you know, so let's say the sitter's name is George. So how does the medium communicate George? Well, one way would be maybe the medium projects an image into the medium's mind of a dollar bill with George Washington on it. You know, and say, well, the medium will say, does George or Washington mean anything to you? Because they saw the dollar bill. So it's, you know, like we always say, mediums get, they may get the same information, you know, but the difference between a good, so-called good medium versus a poor medium is their ability to interpret the information that they're getting, you know. So,
yeah, or not interpret it, not to try to, just give what, here's what I see, here's what I've been given. And then oftentimes it makes no sense to the medium, but the sitter goes, oh, yeah, that makes sense in this way. And I've often seen the medium go, wow, you know. So,
yeah. Sometimes mediums themselves are amazed, right? When they
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, for the earlier question about cold readings and, you know, that sort of thing, there are a couple of things that people should know when they're sitting down to have a medium reading. There's an old expression, don't feed the medium. I mean, if you're concerned about whether you've got a legitimate medium or not, don't give them any information. Give them yes or no. When they say, does this mean anything to you? Say, yes, I can see that. But don't explain, oh, yeah, because my brother who died in this and that is... that's feeding the medium, and then they can go, they can run on that for an hour and then charge you your money and send you home. Right. So don't feed the medium. The other thing is, and we get this question a lot, which is pretty interesting to me, is don't go and sit in front of a medium. Get a phone reading. A phone reading, they can only hear your voice. They can't hear you, see your expression. They don't know if you're wearing a necklace with a religious symbol on it. They can't see your reactions. They can only give you the information. So if you're really concerned, if you're very skeptical about, you know, mediumship at all, do those things. Get a phone reading and give only yes and no answers. And if the medium's good, you're going to get some wow stuff. And even if they're not good, you might get something. it's like I say, every medium's different, and depending on the ability of the medium will determine the wowness of your reading.
Yeah. I've been to group readings where the medium goes right up to a specific person and says, I'm with you. Other times they throw information out to the entire group and wait to see who acknowledges the information. Should all mediums be able to hone in on a specific person? I'd say probably for the first couple of years, whenever we were had these groups, that's kind of the way the mediums were. What I was witnessing is that they were going up in a group setting to a specific person and say, I'm either with you or you. You know, they knew it was right there. And then they would, go on from there. And I thought that that's the way that all mediums, worked. And then I think it was the first time that I watched Janet Nohavik work, and what she did is she started off by giving pieces of information, but she wasn't just saying, I feel a heaviness in my chest. And so that means somebody here, have a loved one that passed due to a heart attack, and then wait, usually in a big group, you'd have 10 people raise their hand. But no, the way she worked is that she would give 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 pieces of specific information. And the odds of 10 pieces of information fitting, a lot of people are very, very slim. The odds are in the, hundreds of thousands to one, that 10 pieces of information, and you're going to take all of them, and then somebody would raise the hand and she'd move to them. That's different than throwing out information and, and waiting for hands to go up. So, a medium, not all mediums are able to go to a specific person and say, I'm with you. Right. I mean, we've seen it both ways.
I have to say, I'm the one who's doing the psychic thing now, or Janet is with us, because while you two were answering the question before this one, this is the exact scenario I was going to describe at one of Janet Nohavik's reading, and how she gives out, 7 pieces of information, and she says, who can claim that? And hands go up, and she'll say, how many of those can you claim? And someone might say 3. Well, how many of those can you claim? And the person might say, all but the way he died. And she'll go, I'm with you. And, right. And I was trying to figure out my wording the whole time you guys were talking about the last question. So
yeah.
Janet may be here with us right now.
Yeah, well, I hope so. There's a lot of, we can do a whole show on the misconceptions about mediumship. But, another thing, I'm sure you've heard it, I've heard it a million times, that people say that mediums shouldn't charge for their services. And some don't, usually the ones that don't have another job and they're not doing it full time. But we always tell them, mediums have families and houses and mortgages and bills to pay. So they have to charge, in a perfect world, doctors wouldn't charge people and lawyers wouldn't charge people, but, you still have to survive. So I don't buy that. A lot of people think because they're working with people in grief and they're doing so-called spiritual work that money shouldn't change hands, but that's just not the way we live, right?
Right.
Yeah, what about the undertaker, morticians and whatnot? They're dealing with people in grief every day. Yeah,
right.
That's just silly. But there was a point that, well, move on. I've lost my thought.
Well, the other misconception that a lot of people have is that mediums, because they know that there's an afterlife, because they do it every day, grief is not as bad for a medium when they lose somebody as it would be for somebody else. So, that's really not the case, because the mediums are human and they love, we grieve because we love. So they grieve. The advantage that a medium may have, which is an advantage that we hope that many members of the foundation have over others, is that when you know, that they can dig themselves out of the deep despair, you know, occasionally by just going through all the experiences they have, maybe a reading they had with a medium or something that they learned or some other after-death communication. So there's a distinct advantage of, I think, that people who believe in an afterlife have over those who don't, right? So, but we've seen mediums, the three of us have, that over the years that's suffered a loss and grieved terribly. So,
yeah,
true.
I'm guilty of that too, because I, you know, I remember thinking that, to, you know, while the, you know, if a medium lose somebody, they could just talk to them at will, so it's not so bad. But mediums tell us, what do they tell us? They tell us that, most mediums tell us that they can't communicate with their own loved ones.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a deep loss. When I think about people, and some have come to our events over the loss of a pet, and those who have lost, let's just say, a child, and somebody in the group says, well, I'm here because I lost my cat. That shouldn't be made any less of. It's a pure love that you had. I think in some ways it's almost stronger because you didn't expect anything from your pet the way we expect from other humans. So that's always a shame if somebody's made to feel like their grief isn't as important.
Yeah, I mean, people grieve in all different ways, and we can't possibly judge the depth of somebody else's grief. So, and with pets, it's a good point. I mean, you know, a lot of people think of pets as their children. You know, so you know, they go through the same things as everybody else.
You know, if in this life, if you're very close to somebody and they go to another state, you know, you want to, hey, I'm going to the movies. You want to, oh, yeah, I can't. I'd love to have a hug. Oh, no, you're in another state. But you know that they're coming back. And it makes you feel like, okay, I miss them, but I know I'm going to see them again. And it's not so bad. All right, that same person goes to another state, but then you don't hear from them, and you don't know if they're ever coming back or you'll ever see them again, or if they're missing or if something's happening, and then you start to churn and you get the agita. And so if you're missing them is a lot more traumatic than if you know that they're coming back. And that's the very same thing for when people cross over. Yes, the people who in our circle who understand that those they're not gone and that you will see them again, it eases the grief, but it doesn't eliminate it, because again, you can't just pick up the phone, you can't go to the movies with them, you can't sit down and watch TV or a dinner or some all that stuff you can't do, you still can't do.
Right.
So you're never and as long and if you've loved them and you're not going to stop loving them, and you're not going to stop missing them. So grief is something that you don't get over, you get through. And you know, if you're deep in grief, you think you'll never get through it, but eventually you find yourself laughing again or enjoying something again. So little by little, you get to get your own life back after you've lost somebody. But but it's not a matter of, you're not going to cure that. And you don't want to cure that. I mean, like I say, everybody you've loved, you love. And it just makes it a little easier if you know that you will see them again.
Yeah, you know, I think another misconception is that we just assume that everyone that's in the afterlife can communicate. And that may not be true, you know. I mean, and certainly not initially anyways, you know. I mean, we don't know exactly how it happens to begin with, but some people in, you know, in the other realm may find it very, very difficult to communicate with the physical world. You know, maybe their vibratory level was too high, or they're not resonating with the person that they're trying to talk to. But it doesn't mean that they wouldn't like to, and it doesn't mean that their love is not there. It's just a delicate process. We've talked about this before, but, you know, I think that there are mediums on the other side that help those in spirit communicate with in the physical. So we may have the person in spirit with their medium in the spirit world communicating to the person in the physical, the sitter, you know, and the sitter's medium. So there might be four people involved in the process,
that's
right?
True.
You know? And maybe they're not mediums per se on the other side. You know, you can call them angels or spirit guides or whatever you want. So I wouldn't be discouraged if you're not getting, you know, any communications, because usually they come in time, you know, but it's a learned process. Mm-hmm. And there's no, yeah.
Many of the questions today have been started with, do all mediums? And the answer is initially no, because all mediums are not the same. I mean, they're the different clairs. I think there's four or five different clairs. You're clairaudient, clairsentient, clairvoyant, which means, well, some people hear something, some people see things, some people smell things, and that's how they get their communication. So when you talk about a medium in a room full of people who says, well, I'm either with you or you sitting next to each other, they're probably the ones who can kind of see an aura or something that there's a gentleman standing right behind you, they'll say. They can see that. And you don't know if they're standing right behind this person or right behind that person, so they've kind of narrowed it down that way. So some mediums are like that. And then others, like I mentioned earlier, they have their symbols that'll be shown to them. Like my uncle was a cop. So if I see my uncle, I'll think, okay, was he in a policeman? He was in a uniform, you know, that kind of thing. So they get their information in different ways, and they will approach you in different ways as a result of it.
Yeah. I think it's only fitting, if you remember, we used to read Claude Swanson's Global Peace Prayer. Claude believed that we can change our future, you know, if on a global level we all got synchronized, you know, and by thinking the same thoughts, we can affect change. So let me read that in honor of Claude. We used to say what he said is, let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And you guys used to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll see you next week.
Good night.